Well, tonight we're going to be extending our discussion about God, and tonight's focus is on wisdom. It's a focus that we don't always entertain. At least I think we entertain it, if we do at all, in sometimes the wrong way. I think the whole point of this discussion is pointed out at the end of the material that we had to sort of focus our attention. He says, wisdom without power would be pathetic, a broken reed. Power without wisdom would be merely frightening. But in God, boundless wisdom and endless power are united. And that makes him worthy of our fullest trust. And so that's the notion that I think we need to walk away from this with when we think about the wisdom of God. And we'll talk about it in terms of God's wisdom as opposed to man's wisdom, but if we're thinking about wisdom, how do you define wisdom? Anybody?
I always go to the definition of knowledge applied. That's pretty simple and straightforward.
Okay. Knowledge applied. That's the way that we typically think about wisdom. But that doesn't really, I think, address the issue of power. And I think wisdom is, the discussion of wisdom would be incomplete if we didn't think about power. So in the material that you were reading this week, yeah, Carol, I didn't mean to.
No, that's okay. I put it up after you almost were. It makes me think about the blind leading the blind. If you have a leader who is in power who doesn't have wisdom, it leads to destruction. Wisdom leads to life and good and order, like the universe is ordered. So if you look at the wisdom in the universe, you can see what, and the wisdom in the universe that you have to have a predator in order to get rid of the weak, that there are weak in the world. So I mean,
okay,
that wouldn't make sense to anybody normally, but to God it made sense.
Yeah, go ahead, Vicki.
I just think about it super simple as people using their experience to pass on to somebody else. Eileen and I were talking about to Nolan this morning about your credit score. We have experience with it, so we were trying to explain it to him. And he's younger and doesn't get it yet, but we were just, it's our experience with it, and we're passing that on. And to me, it's just super simple, but that's all.
Okay. There's a lot of value in thinking about our experience and collective wisdom. That's true. Yeah, Carol.
There's also a common sense wisdom. My dad, one time, we ran a nursery, and he had this one guy working, and we drove past. He told him to go up and shovel a wheelbarrow full of this potting mix. And he took a shovel here, and then he walked 10 steps over and put it in the wheelbarrow. And he walked back, and my dad says, I'm going to have to come back and tell him how to do it efficiently.
Okay. Kind of hang on to that thought, because that I think that's an important idea of knowing how to do it efficiently. Somebody give me your gist. There were a lot of passages that are mentioned in our study material for tonight. Somebody give me a gist of Romans 8. because he suggested looking at Romans 16. What do you see in Romans 16 there, verse 25 through like verse 27? That's where the title for the lesson comes from, verse 27, the only wise God. Somebody give me the gist of Paul's argument here.
What verse was that again, Dean?
Well, I started at about verse 25 and kind of establishing the context for the statement that he makes in verse 27. But that's just me. That's the way I looked at the gist of this argument. What do you see?
Well, it says that when you're looking at the scriptures and the prophets, that it leads to obedience of faith.
Okay.
And to be only wise is God through Jesus Christ be glory. So the only way we can be in glory would be also be obedient of faith.
Okay. What you see is his argument related to wisdom. I'll tell you what I see. I'm back to verse 25 because I think verse 25 introduces the idea of power. To him who is able to establish you according to my gospel. So God has the ability. That's without question. And then he goes on to say that he will establish us in the best possible way. That's kind of back to Carol's argument about efficiency. You have the ability to move the wheelbarrow. And so you need to couple that with the movement of the wheelbarrow because that's the most efficient way to accomplish the task that you want to do, which is filling the wheelbarrow. And I think that's the point that Paul is making here in Romans. God has the ability, and his wisdom tells him the best way, the most efficient way, the best way, the appropriate way to establish us. And it's through obedience. Okay? Yeah.
That obedience is us putting what we know aside and listening to God.
Okay.
I mean, that's where the obedience comes. His is the wise wisdom. And by us putting away what we think might be the way to do, and you put a pile of dirt and some kids, and they want to make mud pies. I mean, they don't want to take a shovel and fill the wheelbarrow, but it doesn't get something done that needs to be done.
Okay. And God knows, I think the part of wisdom is the knowledge of that God has, that this is the way to accomplish establishing us. Now, I look at that and I think, well, there might be another way to accomplish it, but that's misguided. So God establishing obedience as the way to establish us, I think, is the wisdom of God. Anybody look at Daniel, the second chapter, as you were studying this? What's happening in Daniel, the second chapter? What, give me the context for what's going on here.
Rena Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel's explained.
Okay. I started about verse 17 and went down through verse 24 or so. To kind of get the context. What's going on? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the king has been having dreams. And so somebody's finally remembered that Daniel can interpret. And Daniel gives the... says in, say, verse 20, let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. And it is he who changes the times and the epochs and removes kings and establishes kings and gives wisdom to men and knowledge to men of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness and the light dwells in him. And in any way, basically, he's giving the credit to God. He's not the one doing the interpreting, but God is the one who has all of the power.
Yeah, I was looking at when you read in the New American Standard, it's God has the wisdom and the power. So we're talking about a change in administration. This is what the king's dream is all about. You know, you have a place in history and you will be replaced, and another kingdom will come after you, and then another kingdom comes after that, and another kingdom comes after that. That's all within God's power. That is not the Babylonians come to power because Nabopolassar is a brilliant general, and they fall apart because Nebuchadnezzar's son Belshazzar is a weakling and a drunkard. They only lasted for about 60 years. Very, very short in terms of any kind of a world influence. And that wasn't because that was the course of political events. This was what God was doing. If you understand the power, then you can understand that all happens in God's time. It can't happen faster. It has to be in God's time. And I'm sure that there were people among the Jews who thought, well, God just needs to fix things right now. He's been talking about this kingdom that was coming, and he needs to bring that kingdom right now. And that's not the right time. It wasn't the way that was best to accomplish it. You had to go through the Babylonians and then the Medo-Persians and then the Greeks and then get to the Romans before God was ready to establish his kingdom. And I think in my mind, you know, I'm so wise. In my mind, I see some validity to that. God had to wait to establish his kingdom until such time as the Romans had developed this system of roads and communication, and the world was largely at peace. And then God could do what he wanted to do, because then the apostles could use those Roman roads and they could get throughout the entire known world. I'm sure God appreciates the fact that I think he was wise in doing that. God, I don't know why that was the plan of God. It makes sense to me when I look back on it in history. But you have the power to set up kingdoms, to destroy kingdoms, set them up, bring them down. And all of that was so that the kingdom of God could. And God was working all of that out. And I do find it a little surprising that Daniel has this discussion with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, with the Hananel, with, let me see if I can find their names. He goes and he talks to his friends, and they would have been killed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Remember, the captives were taken from Israel or from Jerusalem. They were taken back to Babylon. And so they're incorporated with the wise men there in Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar goes to those wise men. He says, tell them what my dream means. They can't do it. Nebuchadnezzar's going to kill them. That means that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel are in that group. They're going to be killed because the wise men can't interpret the dream. And it's I think it's interesting that in verse 24, Daniel went to Arioch, the man that was the one in charge of the Jewish cadre of wise men, and he says, don't kill the wise men. That meant don't kill me and my friends, and don't kill the Babylonian wise men, because God's the one that's in charge. I just find it interesting that Daniel intercedes on behalf of not just the Jewish wise men, but the rest of the wise men, the whole Babylonian wisdom cadre, because he said, you're asking them to do something they can't do. They can't do this. Takes God. So what are the manifestations of God's wisdom that you see? Carol mentioned one, nature and the interrelationship of nature. That there are predators and there are prey. And in God's wisdom, because he's the one that's in charge of all of this, he has the power to set this up appropriately. You know, when jackrabbits multiply, the coyotes then begin to multiply. They start to eat the jackrabbits. The jackrabbit population declines. The coyote population declines. Then the jackrabbit population comes back. If you didn't have this, the jackrabbits would overrun everything. Smart as we are, we decided to mess with the natural order of things, and they introduced a kind of snake into Australia. They had never had snakes before, but they introduced this kind of snake into the Australian ecosystem in order to control some particular kind of bug that was doing a lot of damage. And then the snakes got out of control because they didn't have a predator to keep them under control. And it was the worst decision they ever made. Did somebody introduce boa constrictors into the swamps in the Everglades? And now, because they don't have any natural predators, they're overrunning the place. Don't mess with what God set up. Any other manifestation of God's wisdom? What do you see?
God limited our lifespan.
Okay. How is that the manifestation of God's wisdom?
Well, we know from early on God allowed mankind to live for many, many years. But because of the sin, God chose to limit man's existence, physical existence, on this earth. And he put a limit on the age that we could live.
I wish you'd found a different way to do it, don't you?
Well, I look it in the mirror every day and yeah.
Yeah, Carol.
Marcia said the order of the solar system.
Okay. How is the order of the solar system a manifestation of God's wisdom?
Well,
power to create.
The power to create, but it's also the order that it has, that people were able to predict and see when to plant and when not to plant. And they even the Babylonians found out this particular time that the moon actually held above their ziggurats, you know, because they worshiped the heavens, and the wise men that came to visit Jesus, the stars told them a story, that the order tells certain things. So
okay, I understand. I that didn't occur to me to think about the solar system, and I'm not real clear on the specifics. Somebody may be clearer than I am. But I understand that if the Earth was just a slightly farther away from the sun, it would be too cold for us to live here.
Yeah.
And if it was just slightly closer to the sun, it would be too hot for us to live here. So you have to have the power to create and then the power to order it so that it works.
And the moon has to be in just the right orbit for things to be that way too. It's not just where the Earth is put, because they're looking for the Goldilocks, you know, planet that we could get in our ships and go off to and have.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
I like it here.
Any other manifestation you see?
I was going to say, Daniel was given the wisdom by God, and we can have wisdom if we study the Word of God. It's not like Daniel, but we can have wisdom. But God is far, far above that, of course. But that's why we have the New Testament, 2:5-7, what will bring us to all of the things that He has done for us.
Okay. Did you have a comment, Ted? No. What about the church? The wisdom of God manifested in the church. What about the manifestation of God in preaching to make known how to be saved? The Jews seek after a sign, the Greeks seek after wisdom, but it's known by the foolishness of preaching or the foolishness of the thing preached. And it doesn't really matter whether it's the foolishness of spreading the word by preaching one-on-one or whether it's the foolishness of the thing preached, which is Jesus dying on the cross to save man. So God has the power to save. There's no question about that. But He does it in the most appropriate way. And I think that's important for us. Yeah, Carol.
You make me think of how the whole Bible, which is written over a large time period and by many different writers, how it harmonizes, how it all goes together, how it doesn't discredit somebody else from earlier. And that doesn't happen in the real world. Somebody comes in power, they are discrediting the person who was here before. So that order and harmony, and when you're talking about the church, the fact that each church stands on its own. Autonomous with elders within the congregation, really, most people don't see that as something that's important, but it is hugely important.
True. As you were talking, I thought about something else, and it went right out of the back of my head.
You caught up with her this morning.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
That happened to her this morning.
So it's...
Gone.
It's God with the power and with the judgment to know how to use that power. We don't always appreciate that that's what's going on. When we talk about the wisdom of God, it's knowing how to use the power that God has. And I, you know, thankfully, I'm not in a position to critique that, because I couldn't. I just don't understand it. And it, yeah, Kim.
You know, you talked about God setting up cultures and governments in order to carry out this plan. And I'm sure that when the people were in the midst of that, like in Daniel, they didn't understand what was going on. They didn't have any idea. The king didn't. I mean, the king probably thought he would reign forever, because that's what kings think, right? And Daniel's telling him, well, actually, no, and this is fleeting, and God's in control. But I look at it, and I can see, in hindsight, that wisdom. We don't always see his wisdom in the immediate. And I think about, in a kind of a micro scale, I think of my own life. There have been times that if I don't see God's wisdom, I might be praying for something, begging for something, and the answer is no. And I don't see the wisdom in that until much later, years later. And so I have to have faith that God has my best interest at heart, and he's using his power in a wise manner in my life. And there are other things that have happened in my life that I have yet to see God's power in it, I mean, God's wisdom in it. Events that have happened that I still don't understand, and I don't see his power and his wisdom in it. But I have to have faith and confidence that he's doing good in my life, and using that wisdom and power. So even though, you know, it's on such a huge scale, a macro scale, I think we need to really take it down to this very micro scale, what that means for my faith and my life.
Okay. Good point. Yeah, Joe.
You make me also think of God's power. You think of power being a big thing, but Corrie ten Boom, who went through the Nazi concentration camp, when she first got there, she hated those fleas. But God's power was in that itty-bitty flea, because the soldiers wouldn't come in, and they had smuggled the Bibles in, and so she was able to continue to have lessons because of the flea. So sometimes we don't realize that God's power can be in something so little.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's just that last little drop of something that God puts on that makes something happen.
Yeah. So let's think about this in the context of Romans 8. All things work together for good to those that love the Lord. What do you see in the context of Romans 8 that is kind of built around God's power and God's wisdom? We'll skip ahead a little bit, but it belongs at this point.
Well, I think what that indicates is kind of what I was mentioning before, is that sometimes in the immediate we don't see it. And so we have to have faith that he is working the things in my life for my own, for my good. That he cares that much about me personally. That he's working in, he says, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. If I'm called according to his purpose, and I'm trying to recognize his wisdom and his power in my life, I'm probably going to see glimpses of it. But I think the bigger issue for me is I will never be wise. Like, I can try to increase in wisdom, but I'll never be God. I'll never be wise. Like, I'll never have his power. But I have to understand that he's using that power and wisdom in my life, and that's called faith.
Okay. Yeah, Carol?
It's sort of like sowing the seeds. Somebody waters, somebody plants, somebody waters, somebody's harvesting. We don't necessarily know why something happened. And sometimes we think it needs to be some lesson that I need to learn. But sometimes it's somebody on the outside who's seeing what you go through. I think of Carolyn especially. And she, why did she have to suffer so much for so long and then again at the end? And yet the lessons that she taught me in the end were wonderful lessons for me. And like Christ, you don't want her to have to suffer for you to have learn a lesson. You don't want Christ to have to suffer for your sins. But sometimes the person who's doing the suffering, it's some lessons are not for us to learn. It's for somebody else.
Yeah, let me go back. I remember what I was going to say before. The whole issue of baptism and putting the old man to death. I think there's a reason why Jesus went to the cross. Because when God puts our old man to death, he does not do it painlessly for us. Baptism seems to be a painless process, but it's not. The old man is not going to go quietly into the night. The old man is going to struggle to stay there. Just like Jesus had to struggle with the cross, we have to struggle with putting the old man to death. So I see us taking up our cross as a very important idea that we couldn't have salvation without the struggle. That would be like the temptation that Satan brought to Jesus. Remember? Fall down, worship me, I'll give you all these kingdoms. And he could. He had the power to do that. But you can't have the crown without the cross, because that was the best way to accomplish it. I think that's why Jesus came here to die. Now, I can't point to a specific statement in the Bible that says that God sent Jesus here to die so that we could see it. Because Jesus could have died up in heaven. And that would have been sufficient. That would have made the sacrifice, but we couldn't see it. And I see that as part of the discussion in Romans. God forgave David, and David was plagued with the idea that I don't have a sacrifice that's sufficient for me to make up for killing Uriah. I thought I can kill a goat. I can kill a bull and I can give that as a sacrifice, but that's not sufficient. I killed Uriah and God forgave him. And the Apostle Paul says in Romans, God declares his righteousness in forgiving sins because Jesus was going to die. You have to have that. Yeah, Jimmy.
In scripture after that, it says, we know all things work for good to them who are called according to his purpose, for whom he did foreknow, he also predestinated to the comfort to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn of many brethren. I can't read it, but that's why that was. It was for our good. It wasn't for anything else.
Yeah. And it was a plan. And all of the steps had to happen in that plan. And as painful as going through the steps is, you know, we tend to be impatient and we say, God, just give me salvation. God, just make me so I don't want to sin anymore. You know, that was Aquinas' problem. He wanted to be saved, and at the same time, he still had these desires that he struggled with. You have to go through the struggle. If you don't go through the struggle, you can't get to eternal life. So this whole process, he describes it this way. He says, he foreknew, he predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, so that he could be the firstborn among many brethren. Those that he predestined, he called. Those who he called, he justified. Those who he justified, he also glorified. We want to get to the glorified part without going through the other steps that God set in place in his wisdom to get us there. And you see it over and over again. You see this question, who has known the mind of the Lord that he might instruct him? Remember, that's what Elihu told Job. Job, shut up. You are not wiser than God. Did you give him advice? That's paraphrasing pretty badly what Elihu said to Job, but it does make some sense. You have to go through the steps. You have to go through the pain to get to where you want to be. And if you try to get there without the steps, it won't work. Now, how do I know it won't work? Because God is wise enough to know that we had to go through the steps. And I just trust him that's the way that it works. Okay, so let's back up just a little bit and talk about transcendent power without wisdom. Power without wisdom. People wondered when we created the nuclear bomb if our power had gotten ahead of our wisdom. And sometimes, you know, we have the power to help babies that are premature live. And I'm talking, what are we down to now? 2 pounds? Is that the limit that we've reached there? It constantly improves. And sometimes we save babies because we have the power and we don't really have the wisdom to know if we should. But sometimes that might not be the best. These babies that are born that are so premature have a life of trouble because we save them. I don't know if that's, you know, creating the bomb. I don't know if that was a good thing or not. Yeah.
I think of Hitler and Putin and drug lords and bosses that have power. You know, they're anybody who's in a situation of power, they can make everybody's life underneath them miserable.
Well, remember, we know a lot about surviving cold temperatures because of the terrible experiments that Hitler's medical people did on Jews. And somebody says, well, we need that knowledge. I don't know if we needed it or not. Yeah, Jimmy.
You don't need it at somebody else's expense, that's for sure. I
mean, yeah.
You do learn things, and I guess scientists learn that way to avoid thinking.
Yeah.
How to save the money, something like that. And if they know what they're doing, it's a good thing.
Well, you know, I'm one of these guys that benefits greatly from the progress that we've made in understanding drugs and drug interactions. And, you know, sometimes we do so much good with some drugs, but we do some real damage as well. I even think that if the whole argument about COVID is true, and they were trying to engineer viruses, they did it so that they could understand how viruses work and they could kill viruses. And they maybe it got away from them. And that might be just an indication that there's some things that we shouldn't try to know, because we don't have the wisdom to know how to do it. We have the power, but we don't have the wisdom. Yeah, Carol.
I remember seeing a show, they were talking about something very similar to what Hitler found out by horrible experiments on the Jews. And the whole point of the show was this one person would not have the surgery because of how the information was obtained. And I guess sometimes that's something that we have to weigh ourselves is.
Right. We have the ability now to help people who desire to have a child, And the way that we do that is we harvest multiple eggs, we fertilize all of those eggs, and then we freeze them, and we at some point implant one into the womb, and it grows and it becomes a child. What happens to the other five? We kill them. Or we save them until somebody decides they don't want them anymore, and then we kill them. And that may be power without wisdom. And I don't know that we'll ever have that wisdom. Well, we ran out of time, as is typically the case. There's some other things that I think are important to discuss about the wisdom of God, dealing with people, and the implications for us.